This is a previously recorded episode.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
It's Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, and we're back with yet another week of the M Squared TechCast right here on the PodcastDetroit.com network. I think we're somewhere in the 40s now of these episodes. It's getting close to a year, I know, right?
46 or 7, somewhere around there.
Okay, all right. Well, we're middle-aged now. We're settling into our comfortable middle-age, right?
That's it. Yep.
All right.
And we're waiting for our guest to call in from Grand Rapids, so I guess we'll have to do a tap dance.
Okay. Is he here? Sounds good.
Okay, I think he's here.
All right.
Mike LaMonaco?
Yes.
Okay, there he is. All right.
Live radio, isn't it wonderful?
Yeah, you just got to love it.
So. Okay. So greetings, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me back, guys.
Hey, well, I wanted to – he's one of our new – not he personally, but his company. he could be if he likes. You know, we could do the Mike LaMonaco
hour. He personally gave you the check.
He did.
You wanted gain listeners, though, right?
Yes. Open Systems Technologies, OST as it's better known in Grand Rapids. Just came on board. I want to thank them for that. You'll be able to find their ads all over my website, my e-newsletters, and soon in video, but I'll talk about that when we're ready to disclose the final details. So let's talk a little bit about OST. Let's just assume folks out there never heard of you, particularly over here on this side of the state, but I know you have a facility over here somewhere. I'm not sure which city you're in.
We do. Thanks again, guys. So OST this is our 20th year in business, which is really exciting. We were founded in Grand Rapids and have a few other offices across the Midwest, Minneapolis, Chicago, and as well as downtown Detroit. So we are right downtown, and our office in Detroit is in the Grand Center building, right over there on West Adams and Woodward area. We're right around the corner from the ballpark, which is nice. We have been doing business in the Detroit market since we were founded 20 years ago, but having a physical presence in the market was really important to us. So almost 4 years ago now, we opened that office, and it's been going fantastic. We are extremely excited, remain extremely excited about the Southeast Michigan market for OST. And in fact, I think we have 4 to 6 open brand, new positions that have been created in the Southeast Michigan office, very heavily bent towards our what we call our business transformation side of our firm, and that is around the areas of custom software development, design, data analytics, and of course the Internet of Things space. So a lot of different areas in that. We remain just extremely excited.
And you're not a little out of it by any means. You're pushing $200 million a year, right?
Yeah, we are. We, in 2002, OST was about a 7-person, $5 million company, predominantly in the ERP and VAR space, product resale space. And we continue to be very strong in both those areas. But we, along with the industry and our markets, have evolved and expanded. And, yeah, so today we're just a little over 200 employees across all of our geographies and revenues, top-line revenue of about $160, $170 million.
Wow. Okay.
Good money.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So what drove that growth? What prompted that growth?
Yeah, great question. So like I said, we remain – very solid in the data center space, the enterprise data center space. So very large data center environments, very complex data center environments, and provisioning and providing solutions and products into that space. So HP, Cisco, NetApp, VMware, are large partners of ours in that space, but our growth really is attributed to our services side. So, you know, in 2008, we doubled down and made an investment in the custom software, a custom application development space, with a lot of people saying that we should not do that when we were such a strong data center-minded company. But we did it anyways. And then around 2011 or so, that really started to take off. And so we started with, you know, 4 or 5 developers. By 2011, we had about 4 or 5 developers. Today, that practice, which is, again, is software development, is design, is data analytics. We've been all, and then our the cloud and platforming and user experience side, which is really our business transformation side of our business. Today, that alone is, 75, 80 people. And 50, about 55 of those are software developers. Mm. So it's a significant area of our business, and that is where we're seeing a lot of that growth. So now new partnerships like Microsoft, right, in the Azure space and cloud platform space, as we have a significant amount of IoT type projects that we are involved with across all of our geographies.
I was going to say, what kind of software are you developing? What are some of the applications you're developing?
So predominantly custom business applications. So it could be mobile, it could be web, it could be internal business applications, all the way to connected devices, connected products, product development, and product design as well. We talked a while back. In February we announced an acquisition of Visual Hero, which is a human-centered design firm. That has worked on projects like, led design projects for companies like GM and Nest, to name a few.
And Johnson Controls is one of your big ones too, right?
And yeah, I was just going to say, and Johnson Controls. So Johnson Controls was an early project for us, which really started out in software development, then morphed into more of a data analytics focus, then morphed into product design strategy, and eventually really IoT, where the applications we created and software was then became embedded into the controls, so building management and building efficiencies controls at Johnson Controls.
Ah, that side of Johnson Controls.
Oh, yeah. What do you think? You think of the cars,
I was thinking of cars, but they're also involved up to their earlobes in building energy management and HVAC systems and stuff like that.
And on the car side, Visual Hero actually designed the interface with Johnson Controls for the Corvette.
So there is some car side stuff there too. Huh?
We should point out Johnson Controls is a tier one auto supplier. At least part of it is.
Yeah, it's based in Milwaukee, but it's got significant operations here in suburban Detroit for the auto part of its business.
Correct.
And West Michigan,
and they've
too.
They've actually spun off their automotive division recently.
Oh, they did? I didn't realize that.
To another company.
Mm-hmm. I'm behind the times here. So, and as one of my guests just penciled in on my notes here that you have a woman president. But, of course, I knew Meredith Bronk took over about a year ago, wasn't it?
Yeah. So Meredith has been with us since 1998, started out as a project manager, and became COO. And then, about a little over 2 years ago,
I was named
our president. And now about not quite a year and a half ago, assumed the role of CEO and president. So, and so, it was a big step for us. You know, Dan Beam and Jim Vandermeer founded the company. Dan retired, an amazing leader, an amazing mentor to many of us, including Meredith. And, in a company like ours, you have that first, that founder led, Meredith's been with us since almost from day one, but, a second generation, so to speak. Different leadership, a fantastic leadership, and absolutely the right person for the right time where we are today as a 200 company that has aspirations to be, a $500 million company and hopefully more someday. But we're excited, and Meredith is fantastic.
I'm going to let Matt ask his favorite question.
Oh,
now.
Yeah. This has become informally known here as the Matt Rausch question on the M Squared Techcast. it is, do you have openings, and if so, for what skill sets, and how can people apply for them? That's left over from the days when jobs were scarce. I know there's a shortage of IT people now, right? We're going to talk to somebody else about that later.
Yeah, I love the question, Matt. Yes, we do. Last year, we kind of went into a little bit of stabilization mode as things were in the industry. We had some really big pressures of changes of change that came through just industry-wise and business trend-wise. And we did some realignment around our focus areas internally a little bit and externally. And now, we have about 16 positions posted right now on our website.
Wow.
I just looked before I got on the show. You can find those at ostusa.com/careers. And it ranged from positions in Southeast Michigan to Grand Rapids to Minneapolis, software developers, recruiters, data analysts. There's a pretty good diversity of roles that we're looking for as we continue to grow.
So does
that's a big part of our growth. That's part of really why we are inspired to grow, is we want to provide as many opportunities for people to work at OSC. We think OSC is a great place to work. And so with that growth, we're able to hire more fantastic folks to come and join our team.
So does that include both entry-level positions and more senior?
Yeah. We have some junior-level positions up to senior level, up to some other, more what I would call maybe managerial roles.
Mm-hmm. What's the hardest opening for you to fill? What's the hardest thing to find?
Great question. I'd say the most challenging, overall the most challenging role to fill these days are developers, no matter what geography we're looking at. And really that challenge isn't so much about a talent gap. I don't necessarily believe it's that. It's more just, in that area across the country, you're looking at about a 1% or less unemployment rate. So the competition is fierce. And so you really have to differentiate yourself, whether that's through compensation, whether that's through benefits.
Which begs the question, how do you do that?
Projects.
Yeah, how do you do that, then? How do you differentiate yourself?
Well, for one thing, he's in Grand Rapids, which is just named one of the hippest cities in America, believe it or not. So,
well, I think it's about offering geographical diversification. So for OST, we have four different office locations for people to choose from to work at, which is great. We do put a lot of focus and a lot of investment into culture, and I think the success of that is kind of speaks for itself. And then I think it also is the types of projects we get involved with and the types of customers we work with. And so meaningful work where folks who are very talented are able to come in and we give them kind of high, wide walls is what we say, is that we trust you. You're really smart. You wouldn't be here otherwise. And we're going to trust you to do the right things for the right reasons and in turn delight our clients. And if those things happen, as well as honoring each other as employees and team members, those are the types we want. We want smart, driven, entrepreneurial people who want to be a part of OSD.
We're going to have to leave it at that. Unfortunately, those 14 minutes go by really fast. This is Mike LaMonaco, who's VP of Marketing? I'm going to promote you here.
Director of Marketing.
Director. Well, you should be Vice President. I'll give Meredith a call.
He will be soon.
Okay. All right. We'll get you a promotion. All right. And once again, that's OST, headquarters in Grand Rapids, but offices in Minneapolis, Chicago, Detroit. And who knows where else soon, right, Matt?
Tomorrow the world.
That's right.
Okay, this is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch.
And you've been listening to M Squared Techcast. We'll be back with a little bit of information about CDH.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan, and aren't we having fun?
And this is live radio on the M Squared TechCast. Yes, we are having some fun here. We are trying to reach our next scheduled guest, as they say, south of the border in Canada, Mark Becker from CDH, a fine IT services company with offices in Grand Rapids and Detroit, formerly downtown Royal Oak, not far from where we're sitting right now in the PodcastDetroit.com studios. So do we have, like, something to play here, like the girl from Ipanema or something?
We should wait for the Rio Olympics. Okay, yeah.
Okay.
It's ringing. Hopefully this is Mark here. Don't you just love live radio? But Foster's going to clean this up, so we won't hear
we'll
this.
Fix it. We'll fix it in post. Right. So. Okay, gotcha. Baker's Bar.
This may be.
That used to be my favorite bar in Frankfort,
Michigan. Mark.
Hey, Mark, Mike Brennan.
You're live on the air.
I'm live on the air?
You're live on the internet, so.
Okay.
All right.
Well, this has devolved into a morning zoo show today.
Yes.
I don't know what the problem is here. All we need is some wacky sound effects. Does somebody have
I had that, but somebody took that.
One of those whistles or something.
I'm going to buy one, so. Anyway, yes,
make the bell ring here.
And we
that was broken.
And we didn't even have a beer here before we got started.
No,
so God help us if we did. So
I think that's the problem.
Yes, that would have straightened everything out.
Is this a new sponsor, by the way, here in the PodcastDetroit.com studios? We have new coasters from something called Sherwood Brewing Company in Shelby Township.
No, I think they just came in on a show and left those.
All right. Okay. That's Jessica, our engineer. She's awesome.
Swag.
So, okay.
Well, anyway, we got to get back to Mark.
Yeah, let's talk to Mark.
So Mark
Becker. Talk to Mark about tech. So
I partner at CDH in Grand Rapids, but you guys also have, I've been downtown. It's a hard office to find, but I know it's right there on Woodward Avenue, right? So,
yeah, I mean, it's like in this epic, iconic, if I could find another adjective,
cool
building right on the
corner
of John R. and Woodward. You know, the Wright K building, so
awesome. Sure.
It's just that entrance is a little tricky, is all. If you find...
getting in... that would be the security, it is a little tricky. And if you're a little inebriated, it's even trickier, right?
Yeah, and since you have
well, how would I know that?
Come on. And I know you have beer drinking events.
I didn't get any response.
Yeah. And I know you have.
That explains that Brennan was the one
you might have had.
That's why I couldn't find it. You know, so damn things around here somewhere. I know.
He just come back from Sherwood Brewing Company.
That's it. Yeah. Well, I know you. Every other month, you're hosting a beer drinking event there, if I recall.
I think we've got one coming up in September. I'll just have to check with our trusty little calendar here. But, yeah, I think we've got one coming in September at that office. So,
all right. Well, while we're waiting for that, why don't you tell me some of the recent awards that your company has won? I know I've known about you guys for about 15 years now.
Yeah, you said he interviewed one of the founders.
Yeah, Paul Hillman, was it?
Paul Hillman.
Yeah.
Paul Hillman.
He was the H in CDH, right? But he's retired now, I believe, or semi-retired.
He is. He's, like, got one foot in and one foot out. You know, he's got, like, 3 feet because the other foot is in Haiti, and, you know, the guy's a busy guy. So he's got a lot going
on. That's cool. Yeah, because he and I actually interviewed each other because I was working for WWJ at the time doing the Glitter newsletter, and then he was doing podcasts way back. I mean, way back, where he would interview people for a podcast, and we went to this little recording studio someplace in Royal Oak here and recorded something that wound up on the CDH website. So, but tell us about some of the recent awards your firm has won. I know, and we've got a conference to talk about too.
Sure. Well, we've been around for 26 years, so we're founded in 1990, 2016. So we've been around forever. And I think it's our fourth year in a row we've won the 101 Best and Brightest Companies to Work For in both West Michigan and also the regional Detroit one as well. So that's quite an honor because that's kind of employee-nominated, employee-picked. And that sort of goes along with our firm values. We're an ESOP company,
So that simply means that we're employee-owned, or a portion of our company is employee-owned. And Paul was part of the founding of that ESOP, along with me and some of our other former partners, back in 2012, I believe. So anyway, you know, we love our employees. Our employees love us, and that carries over into our work, and our clients love us. And so the other award kind of is a reflection of that, and that's, you know, being identified as one of the top 200 Microsoft partners in the U.S. out of 100,000 Microsoft partners. So
that's great.
That's kind of a beauty contest, but it all is based on feedback from happy customers and stuff. So keep your employees happy, keep them loyal, and you'll have happy customers as well.
So you have offices, obviously, in downtown Detroit and Grand Rapids. I'm trying to remember if you have other office locations.
We don't, but one of our consultants works in Arizona, and he's constantly lobbying for us to have an office in Phoenix, Arizona. But right now, we just have a consultant out there.
Okay. And how many people do you employ at this point?
We're like around 34-ish, kind of in that frame of numbers. About 23 are consultants. The rest are staff, sales staff, and admin staff.
All right, so tell us a little bit about the highlights of that Microsoft Worldwide Partner Conference. That's sort of tech central, so tell us what was going on there. What were the highlights for you?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, the drumbeat has been, for us, been pretty consistent in the last few years of Microsoft really pivoting to the cloud. And so it's, you know, it's interesting because as partners, you hear the message first, and then you're getting the message out that, hey, Microsoft is becoming a cloud company. But I think what we've seen really now is a tipping point where they're no longer talking about get to the cloud. Now they're talking about now that we're all at the cloud, here's where we're headed. And that's interesting from the outsider's viewpoint, because I think a lot of our customers are still kind of slowly still getting to the cloud. But, I don't know of any customers that we have, customers, clients, that doesn't have some sort of cloud strategy, cloud thought right now, or that they've already done. So, Microsoft went through a leadership change in the last 2 years, no longer Steve Ballmer.
Mm-hmm. We've had a few hiccups with our with our phones here today. So, are you still there?
No, the call dropped. I think it.
Okay.
Huh? Well, Foster,
you want to try?
Got your work cut out for you.
This will be a short one.
Yeah, let's try them again. Anyway, CDH is an IT services company with offices in Grand Rapids and downtown Detroit, formerly Royal Oak. So, but. He must have gone through a dead spot or something. I'm not sure what.
Much time?
So we've had several little glitches in the what kind of
Wow, you guys just missed the best of my speech.
Well, we knew it. So you
just can't redo it now.
Okay.
We're talking about Microsoft and the cloud.
Yeah,
so
the partner conference. Where was the conference, by the way, this year?
You know, the when I got to the cloud, I must have hit a rainstorm or a thunderstorm, got knocked right out of the cloud when we got.
Okay,
that'll happen.
Sorry about that. The conference was in Toronto.
Oh, okay. Roughly how many people there? Any idea?
About 20,000.
Oh wow! Okay.
Now, you didn't bungee jump off that tall building, did you?
The CN Tower.
Yeah.
Right.
No.
Ah.
You couldn't have paid me to jump. No, I've been up there, but I've been going to Microsoft partner conferences since before they were called partner conferences, back in 1997. Mm. So, it's as a veteran, kind of hearing their message changes over the years and the leadership changes and stuff. It's been an interesting observation from my standpoint. I don't know if you've heard me talk about the differences between Steve Ballmer and Satya Nadella, the current
CEO. That's when we lost you. So what are the differences?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Steve was listening in on our call.
He probably was, and he hit the delete button. So.
No, you know, it's a different Microsoft since Satya took over. Virtually all the demos that were mobile demos were done from an iPhone, which you never would have seen 2 years ago. So, you know, when they kind of transitioned to the cloud and Satya took over, everything in their technology is really geared to work with anything, any kind of technology. I think they finally realized, hey, Apple technology is here to stay. Everybody has an iPhone or an iPad or an iThis or an iThat or an Android. And, you know, to make this all work together, we've got to support everything. So, you know, that's a lot different Microsoft than the ones we all grew up on. And that makes it better for your and my clients and customers.
Yeah, it needs to be technology agnostic.
They just need things to work.
Yes, I mean,
you got it.
Because people don't really care who does it. They just want it done, right? You know, so.
They just want it done, yeah. And you know what? That's kind of what the cloud is doing for a lot of things. It's taken the focus off, I hate to say this, but it's taken the focus off the IT department and kind of put it into the hands of the business and kind of consumerized IT. Ultimately, IT has become kind of like the telephone company, you know? I just need a dial tone. I don't care where it comes from,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. So. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time.
So that's kind of what we're hearing.
Yeah.
We're out of time. You lost the best part of this.
I know. Well, we'll get you back on next month, and you know, we'll try that again, and you can we can update the story. So,
but yeah.
All right. This has been Mark Becker, who's a partner at CDH. They have offices, well, the main office is in Grand Rapids. They have one in downtown Detroit. And this is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch, and you're listening to the M Squared TechCast on the PodcastDetroit.com network.
It's Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch, and you're listening to the M Squared TechCast, proudly part of the PodcastDetroit.com network.
Oh, I thought you were going to introduce
her. Oh, well, yeah, of course I have to. Rachel Downs, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. At long last, Rachel Downs.
How many months did I have to wait for my name to be pronounced correctly?
far too long. I don't know.
I just can't keep this gag going.
I sort of like Rochelle. I don't know.
I thought Rochelle was our Shelly. I thought Shelly.
Oh, yeah. She's going to start throwing stuff.
Yeah, I know. I'm right next to her, too, so I got to be careful.
All right. So Rachel Down is director of, is it Entrepreneurial Services?
No, I'm the vice president.
Vice president.
Of Entrepreneurial Strategies
at Inforum.
Should be senior vice president. I think we should promote her, too. What do you
think? Sounds good to me.
All right.
Okay, all right. More money. So.
Yes, from Inforum, the economic organization, the economic empowerment organization in Detroit. And she has a segment every month on this here show in which she gets to interview a guest. And so take it away.
Thanks, gentlemen. I'm really excited to be here because we just updated our performance numbers. And our Engage initiative is really designed to establish Michigan as the hub for high-tech, high-growth women entrepreneurs. And so over the course of the last 4 years, you know, the Engage platform is pretty robust in that we have technical assistance programs that guide women through the process of commercializing intellectual property. We've done a lot of work to educate and confirm new women angel investors, recognizing that the more diversity we have in the angel investment community, the more investment will be made in women-led ventures. And the women who have been participating in Engage, either through the technical assistance programs, our masterclass is a peer-facilitated program where entrepreneurs really learn from each other and work with some of the industry leaders to grow and scale their businesses. And Christina York is currently in the Detroit masterclass. And I'm really excited to have her here because she's got a fascinating story and a fascinating company with a super unique technology that everyone's going to probably have a much better understanding of because of the popularity of Pokemon Go.
And let me give, how is that name pronounced?
The company name?
Yes.
Altality.
Altality.
It's a mashup of alternate reality.
Got it. Okay, now I get it. I was looking at that and I thought, is that a typo? So...
The more important name.
Well,
is
in keeping
spellbound.
With the, yeah. say, in keeping with the whole Rochelle thing, we need to completely butcher it for like 6 months.
Yeah.
Okay, then we can call her Xtina. Yeah.
But before we launch into the company story, I think your personal story is really fascinating. You were a Detroit Startup Weekend winner.
Yes.
So tell us about that experience.
I had been in middle management for about 10 years.
Ready to move on.
Yep.
Yes.
My mission was complete. I was ready to move on and just trying to explore opportunities. And I heard about this Startup Weekend thing and I thought, geez, I have nothing better to do with 56 hours of my life.
It's just
than
a weekend, right?
Oh, it was amazing. So signed up. I thought I get to be a designer again because I'm a user experience designer by trade. So went there, pitched this idea, which has since become my life, and formed a team. Pitched it at the end to a panel of investors, and we won Detroit Startup Weekend. And then because Detroit is a qualifying city, we went on to the global startup battle.
Ooh.
And we were competing against 23,000 people across 83 countries.
Wow.
And we won one of the five prizes. And that's the second year in a row a Detroit woman-run company has won a global startup battle prize.
Wow, and that is how much dough we're looking at?
Oh, pretty much zero.
Tons of Ricky. Yes.
Yeah. It did.
But the exposure will be great. It's like being an artist, right?
It was. Yeah. Well, okay, one of our prizes was a booth at the Consumer Electronics Show.
That's worth several thousand.
Yes.
Anyway,
yeah. So a trip to Vegas.
Wow, that was a couple of great. And then the money for the tables, right?
Yep.
Oh, perfect. So
we had a nice booth, and we got exposure to major companies. They had arranged for us to meet the CTO of the United States, Megan Smith. It was like crazy, all the opportunity we had at that moment.
Mm. So how long had this idea been percolating in your head to do this company?
About 3 days. 3 whole days, I tell you.
Lots of beer, I'm thinking. There was beer involved, too, right?
So this is something you literally thought up over the course of that weekend, right? So
right before the weekend, because
right
you need to
weekend.
Have an idea to pitch.
Right, right.
So
yeah.
I just did it from a personal pain point. Reading
which was?
Yeah, we haven't gotten into what
the
you tell us about
technology.
The company.
Yeah.
What the company does.
So we are an augmented reality startup company. So if you've heard of Pokemon Go, you understand the idea of layering digital experiences on top of the physical world.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do is we create digital 3D immersive experiences for kids' content. So paper books, or we have card systems. And right now it's being used in hospitals by therapists to distract kids during painful or scary procedures. So it's used as a tool to keep them not only engaged in fun, kid-like activities that are mentally stimulating, but also to refocus their attention on maybe not on the unpleasantness of the situation they're in. So the idea was, when I first started, was really focused around children's books. And I'm an avid reader. I'm also a parent. And I hated leaving my book to, like, really engage with it in a new way. I was reading a book of seafaring stories, and I wanted 3D ships to compare against one another. And I'm typing on this iPad that is supposed to be such a smart device, and I'm using my thumbs, and I'm thinking, why can't this device just recognize what I'm looking at and show me all kinds of related content so I can get into my story more deeply? So that's where the idea originated from, and then kind of morph
who did you hook up with then at the startup weekend that had the software background to make this happen?
There were four of us, and my co-founder Margie Knapp and Seth Archambault and Sean Yalda, and they actually, you know, they were part of Grand Circus Crowd and a startup in the startup world, and they have some technical skills. They're videographers, they're photographers, but none of us had done augmented reality before. And that weekend, a lot of people went up to us and said, you want to do augmented reality in 56 hours? Are you crazy? And we're like, we will do this. So we really hacked together a tech demo, one page from the book Where the Wild Things Are.
Oh, nice.
The Wild Rumpus.
Yes. Yep. One of my faves.
So that we, you know, figured out how to, instead of building a 3D model from scratch, how we could scan toys with a free app that we had on our phone to really just show a proof of concept of what it would be like.
Hmm. It's gotten more sophisticated since then, right?
Only slightly. No, very, very much so, yes.
Good.
So how long was it from Detroit Startup Weekend to when you quit your day job and became a full-time CEO?
Yeah. So Detroit Startup Weekend was in November of 2014. The Consumer Electronics Show we exhibited at was in January of 2015. And on day three of that, we saw that CNET covered us. We were called Magic Book back then. And I remember riding the shuttle home because we couldn't afford a cab, and we were carrying all our equipment because we couldn't afford a security guard. And and we were literally just searching hashtags on CES 2016. We found ourselves and a video where CNET had put up, like, it was a big coverage on us. And so I called the lawyer right then and there on that shuttle and said, file the LLC, file the patent, and
let's get copyrighted
Margie started full-time right away that January, and I worked for until April Fool's Day of that year and to help fund the company. So and then I was done. So it was literally less than 6 months from the time that I had a random idea in bed to the time when I went over the cliff.
Wow, that's amazing.
It doesn't usually work like that. So, yeah, great.
Yeah, I had two small children at home as well. I had a six-month-old and a two-and-a-half-year-old when I decided to do that. So.
That's a lot of work. I bet the two-and-a-half-year-old got potty trained real quick to free up more of your time. So.
She's become very self-sufficient.
Cooks her own breakfast and everything.
Yeah. That's a great line about, I think it was, God, I forget which writer it was, that said, you know, we don't, when you have your first child, you like hand make organically grown vegetables to feed it. And then by the time you have your second kid, it's like you plop a thing of Mushu pork from Chinese takeout down in front of it and say, come on, kid, let's go. We're a busy family here. Let's.
It was, I mean, it could have been seen as an awkward time as, you know, a woman starting a family. But really, when you looked at the AR space, it was the absolute right time to start an augmented reality company. And to say that, you know, 18 months in and then Pokemon Go hits and we've got this mass market exposure and it's done nothing but help us ride this wave, helping people understand what is augmented reality technology and why is it applicable to day-to-day life and how, what value can it bring?
I think those are three good questions to answer. Go ahead.
Isn't it great when they interview themselves?
It makes it simple.
You guys take a break. Come back in 20 minutes. It'll be fine.
Go
trust
ahead.
Me.
Fill us in.
Smoke them if you got them.
Yeah.
All right.
So, I mean, augmented reality. I mean, I'll start. Augmented reality has so much opportunity. There's big companies out there that are well establishing in certain markets. But then you see other applications that really get into the hands of everyday folks, you know, not big enterprise solutions or highly specialized technology. So Pokemon Go offers people an easy way to engage with this cutting edge or sometimes intimidating technology in a very simple way, day to day. And it also, I don't have to walk into a pitch now and explain, spend 20 minutes educating what this technology is. If people don't understand it, they can't use their imaginations to see how it can really benefit the market. And it's also got people interested in using it and wanting to make it too. This is a big thing for us, finding talent in the Midwest. For, you know, gaming technology is typically West Coast. Mm-hmm. And so people looked at Pokemon Go and said, I can do this. And now we're finding all kinds of hobbyists and closet gamers who built augmented reality stuff in their free time. And we're fueled pretty much 100% by students right now. So it's a great place to be.
Yeah, I will in the shameless plug department. Oops.
Oh, wait a minute. That one didn't work.
Get the one that works. Lawrence Tech, my employer, has been rated in the top 20 for game design by an international survey.
Wow.
Now, if we could just find a way to connect you with Lawrence Tech.
However,
wow, it could be great, you know? So
let me know. Yes, I know a few professors. So actually, you know, to be fair to everybody, Michigan had three schools in the top 20, believe it or not. There was Ferris State and Michigan State were also listed there, too.
Really?
So, yep.
Because I, you know, as Christina mentioned, I know that the whole virtual augmented reality sector is experiencing exponential growth, but it's primarily been on the West Coast. So mm-hmm. it's really heartening to hear that the schools here in Michigan are excelling.
Well, it's this really cool combination of art and of high tech. You know, I mean, it's computer science and art mishmashed together. And what could be more fun than that? So
and what we have to focus on is keeping that talent. We've got these top programs here, keeping them here in the state. Mm-hmm. And there needs to be more companies and more jobs offered to be able to do that.
So what? Where are you now? What's the next step?
World domination.
Of course, yes. What did I think of that?
So we.
I'm sorry. You sound like you should be stroking a cat while you say that.
It's under the table. Okay.
Or running for president.
Yeah. Yes. No, sounds great. We don't go to politics.
So, you know, we're working with C.S. Mott Children's Hospital in Ann Arbor right now, learning how to really implement our technology effectively. We're starting in talks with seven major hospitals across the U.S., so we're just going to market now. The idea is to really kind of saturate that pediatric hospital market, get in there, and then expand services to adults as well. Adults are just as scared and nervous as kids are. They just don't show it as much sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And are you hiring? Go ahead.
Oh yeah,
leap in there, man.
Yeah, I mean, do you have openings at this point? Is it are you in growth mode at this point?
Yeah, we're hiring investors right now. Interested in?
You got some dough? Let us know.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Yep.
We're coming off of a great summer with a fantastic team that we got primarily from the University of Michigan this year. We work with community colleges all over the state, though, and so we are just moving into kind of go-to-market mode, get some sales, and then go for our seed round of investment.
Okay. And where can people go for more information on the company?
GetSpellboundBooks.com.
So where does the what is it again? Altality?
Altality?
You don't have a URL for that. That's your company name, yes, right?
We do. Altality.com will work. Altality is the company. Spellbound's the product.
Oh, okay. Got it. All right.
Well, it sounds really cool. And you know, I'm interested also. How much time do we have left?
Not
here?
Much. 30 seconds.
Mere seconds. Okay, forget it. Okay. We've got to have you back. I want to talk more about this because I want to talk about like various delivery methods for this technology, Oculus Rift, when we get fully immersive, when we get a holodeck essentially. So.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we're making it.
Well, you're wearing a Star Wars shirt. Star Trek,
yeah,
Star Wars.
That.
Okay,
yeah, both. Yeah.
Okay.
So.
All right.
I told you she was a rock star.
Okay.
Yes. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time in this segment. We'll have to have Rachel. Bring her back. She was looking at me, getting ready to left right there, so I had to be careful.
Yeah.
This is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch, and you're listening to the M Squared TechCast. Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with the fourth and final segment of the M Squared TechCast today. And we're going to be talking to Enrico Schaefer, our drone law pro.
Or as our engineer likes to call him. No, we won't do that because she'll hit me too. So okay. Never mind. Hey. We'll skip right over that.
Yes. Let us refrain from physical violence. Yes. All right. Okay.
It's been one of those shows here. We've had all sorts of interesting things happening. And we're going to continue on because we have Enrico is going to talk to us about the we've been waiting for a long time for this to happen, but the Part 107 for drone piloting and all the regulations that go with that is kicking in on August 29th. And I know you can explain it a whole lot better than I just did, Enrico, so go ahead.
Yeah, so essentially the FAA has been trying to integrate drones or unmanned aerial vehicles into the national airspace for years, really aggressively in the last couple of years. And there's a lot of companies, a lot of businesses who want to use drones for business. And they've had both hands tied behind their back. And until recently, you know, really one hand tied behind their back. Well, on August 29th, the new drone regulations known as Part 107 are going to be implemented by the FAA, and there'll be something that will be called a remote pilot certificate, which is really a drone pilot license, which you can take a test, pay $150 fee and become a drone pilot, and then fly under these new Part 107 regulations for commercial purposes.
Do I get wings, man? Do I get wings? Come on now.
You get wings. You can definitely get wings.
And the white scarf. I got to have the white scarf. You know, so.
Leather helmet and goggles. So, yeah, Snoopy. I can see it now.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's been a long time coming, but we're really going to start to see a lot of more commercial drones taking to the sky by the end of this year. And really next year will be the year of the drone. You're going to start to see drones more and more often in the sky doing different business purposes. And there'll be anything from aerial photography and videography to inspection to, in some cases, even doing delivery services. Not quite Amazon yet, but we're getting there.
Yeah, I love that commercial that was on TV a few months back where these people are hiding inside the building and all the drones are waiting for them outside.
Yep, exactly. The drones are going to be attacking. And, of course, everyone's got concerns about drones and what that means for privacy and you know, what it means for private property rights. Can a drone fly over my yard? And all of that will have to be sorted out over time. But generally, you know, you don't own much airspace above your yard, and drones are going to be able to fly overhead. And, you know, most of them will not be trying to take your picture or invade your privacy. They'll be doing really pedestrian things like taking photographs, doing inspections, doing surveying, and ultimately delivering packages to your neighbor.
Yeah, land use studies.
Realtors, you know, will use
yeah,
them.
Yeah, right, exactly. City government, zoning officials, you know, pedestrian stuff like that, the Department of Agriculture, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Well, ITC already uses them to inspect their high-powered electrical lines. So.
Well, it's a heck of a lot cheaper to do that than to send somebody out there in a four-wheel drive truck, right?
So. Or a helicopter, exactly. Which is very expensive.
And safer, a lot safer. I mean, really, it's about safety and efficiency. And drones can do a lot of jobs that that people have to do right now, which are not particularly safe. And so we're expecting that people will ultimately embrace drones because they provide a tremendous amount of societal benefit. Drones are good is the mantra of the industry in order to overcome the knee-jerk reaction that some people have to wanting to shoot down the drone.
That drones are scary, right? You know, so just how much airspace over my yard do I own? Is it like the 400-foot level, or what's the regulation say?
Well, there is no regulation per se. The FAA, it depends on whose perspective, right? The FAA essentially says they have jurisdiction from a blade of grass on up.
Yeah.
So you don't own much, if any. There are some prior court cases which did not resolve the issue, but suggested that if you have any private property rights, that it's not substantial. And, of course, if the FAA says that a drone is clear to fly over your property, you're going to be fighting not only the drone operator, but the FAA as to whether or not you can control that. Mm-hmm. So the FAA's fundamental view is same as with airplanes. If I, as a private property owner, could stop helicopters or planes from flying over my house, well, we wouldn't have much of a transit system for commercial airliners, and we wouldn't be able to transport people by helicopter from one hospital to another. So as a matter of simple economics and convenience and societal benefit, the FAA wants to control everything from a blade of grass on up. And if they say you can fly, then chances are you're going to be able to fly and win that battle. People expect that they own above their property, but it's more from a privacy standpoint, right? They don't want drones spying on them and looking in their windows. And those things are really hard to accomplish with a drone. And so you're not going to see a lot of drones are very loud. You're not going to be using a drone to spy on someone. It would be a very poor tool to accomplish.
It'd be like spying on someone with a helicopter, basically, right? Yeah, a little noisy, little.
Well, especially the commercial ones. They're not little tiny things. They're pretty big.
Yeah,
they're pretty big.
Well, and I would,
you know, they can't follow you around because they, you know, they can only stay in the air for about 20 minutes. So it's, again, it's not a very efficient tool to surveil someone in those types of activities.
Yeah. Okay. Whenever I think of a helicopter surveilling someone, I always think of the final paranoid scene in Goodfellas. But anyway, where the helicopter's following Ray Liotta around. Yeah. Right. But I would imagine what the FAA is mostly concerned with is safety. Right. I mean, they don't want these things in the air near airports. They don't want these things crashing into each other. You are talking with the bigger ones about blades that are big enough to do some damage to a person if it happened to crash. You know, that kind of thing.
Exactly. The FAA is concerned about safety on the one hand, and then they, of course, there's just a huge commercial benefit to getting drones in the air, and so they want to encourage that. The United States is lagging behind many other countries in terms of using drones for lots of beneficial things. So there is a tremendous amount of pressure on Congress and the FAA to move this along and to get these drones regulated and flying safely and flying efficiently. So, you know, that's what's happening. And if you want to get in the drone business, or if you have a business that can use a drone, that door is now opening up in a more substantial way. And there is going to be a path for you to follow to be able to use a drone for your own business benefit or the benefit of your customers. It doesn't matter if you're in real estate trying to get that great shot, or if you're in construction and you're trying to do traffic control over a construction site, or you're in movie and film and you don't want to have to pay that helicopter pilot $10,000 a day, or you need to get medicine from point A to point B into a remote location.
Actually, there's a company out of Willow Run Airport that produces a very large drone about 9 feet across that's doing just that in third world countries. I can't remember the name of the company, but they would, you know, because the roads are so bad in third world countries that they, for the last mile or two, they can put, and it carries up to, I think, up to a kilo, and then they can put medical supplies in it and fly it directly into the affected areas.
Yeah, no question about it. And when you think about things like search and rescue, with an infrared, you know, payload, you can put a drone in the air and you can spot someone lost in the woods. And it's a lot cheaper and a lot easier than if you have to send up a manned aircraft.
So how long do you think till the traffic helicopter is a drone?
I would say we've got a good 2 or 3 years before that happens. But that type of application is coming. It's only a question of time.
Hmm. So if someone wants to be a commercial drone pilot, where do they go? What do they do?
So if you want to be a commercial drone pilot and you want to use your drone for business, on August 29th, the FAA is going to start processing applications for remote pilot certificates. And so what you want to do is you want to go to the FAA.gov website. You want to look up drones or SUAS, small unmanned aerial systems, and get to that page. That page will tell you where the testing centers are near you. There's 17 testing centers in Michigan,
really?
And you go, you're going to sign up for that test. You're going to study part 107. You're going to go take that test. Hopefully you're going to get that 70% in order to pass the test. You're going to get vetted by the TSA. and they're going to establish that you're not a terrorist, right? And then you'll get
well,
your remote
Matt,
pilot.
We're not sure.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I don't know. I did pass a background check to interview Biden once, but other than that, I don't know.
Exactly. So, yeah, so within a couple of weeks, hopefully after August 29th, you could actually hold that remote pilot certificate, and then you have to comply with the regulations with Part 107. Mm-hmm. Can't fly at night, can't fly beyond line of sight without special permission. There's height restrictions, there's airspeed restrictions, there's weight restrictions. That's what you're going to get tested on. As long as you comply with those regulations, you can go ahead and make money or have a commercial benefit to your drone operation.
Now, are they going to have the N registration number on these commercial drones so that if they violate the rules, somebody can report the N number?
Yes. Now, you won't be able to see the N number on a drone like you can a tail number on a plane, but N number registration is required. So if you're going to fly a drone, one of the regulations, one of the Part 107 regulations requires you to have a number on your drone. If it crashes, if it causes harm, technically they should be able to put it back together and figure out what that number is and link it to you.
And these are, if you want to get into this business as a commercial operator, this is not a low-cost kind of thing. I mean, you're going to be spending, what, 10 grand, 20 grand for a really nice, and you probably want to have multiple ones too, right?
Well, that's the interesting thing, Mike, is it is really low cost relative to most anything else you can imagine doing as a business, because you can get a world-class drone that's going to allow you to do a lot of different things for between $1,000 and $2,000, even cheaper, if you're just doing aerial photography and videography.
Like Phantom 4 or something like that.
And you get that, you know, you've got some basic business costs associated with you know, with insurance, which isn't required, but you certainly should have it. But it's a relatively low cost of entry into this market.
All right, Enrico, if people want more information about this stuff, how do they get in touch with you?
Go to www.dronelaw.pro. That's our website. We've got a lot of information. And if you have any questions, feel free to give us a call. And we answer a lot of questions every day about how to become a drone pilot or how to start a drone operation in business.
All right. Once again, that's dronelaw.pro. We're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank all of our guests today, Enrico Schaefer from Drone Law Pro up in Traverse City, Rachel Downs from Inforum, and her fascinating guest, Christina York of Altality, Mark Becker from CDH, and Mike LaMonaco of Open Systems Technologies. Mike, this was a fun one today.
Yeah, it worked out well. I mean, we had a little few challenges there with cell phones, but we got through it. So
technical glitches, they're fun.
And live also, radio, we love it.
Also want to thank Jessica, our engineer par excellence, for her usual great job.
Thanks, guys.
She puts up with us every week, whether she likes it or not.
Okay.
So.
And we will see you next Monday. Distant early warning, we will not be doing a show on Labor Day, I'm assuming, because I don't want to labor on Labor Day.
We always take the federal holidays off.
Okay, so. All right. Well, that's one of the advantages of being a Monday show. Is that why we did this?
That's why we did it.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll see you next week anyway, because it's not a holiday next Monday. And for until next Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast on the PodcastDetroit.com network.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at PodcastDetroit.com.
This is a previously recorded episode.